For some, autumn brings a season of pumpkins, and pumpkins spiced everything. As for us, we're apple people. Apple cider. Apple picking. Caramel-covered apples. Give us all of the apples. But it turns out, 3 very cold days last April may curb our enthusiasm for the season. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Today we're going to talk to 2 apple farmers battling this year's growing woes.
We really do not have very many apples this year.
Jan Upston is a second-generation apple farmer. Her parents started Wassum Fruit Farm in Milan in the 1940s.
When my parents got married, my grandfather gave them the property. So, you know, we grew up here, and then in 78, my husband and I moved back here to help my parents.
Yeah. Wassum grows many kinds of fruit, and pumpkins too, we should say, but the thing we called to talk to you about is apple season. Can you tell us how the season's been going so far?
Well, it got really cold 3 days in April, and it froze off a lot of our blossoms, so we really do not have very many apples this year. And the same thing happened last year, and so we're hoping it doesn't happen again. But, you know, we cannot control the weather. We don't have enough money to have helicopters fly over the orchard to keep it warm when it's getting really cold. And some of the growers do. You know, they have helicopters that keep flying over the orchard to keep the trees warm when they know it's going to get down to 22 degrees. But we don't, and we are on flatter land. So if we were on hilly land, the frost would go down, and a lot of the apples would be okay. So that's been our problem with the property that we have. We do get things frosted off.
My gosh. Can we go back to the helicopters for just a minute? How do helicopters keep trees warm?
Well, they just fly over and, you know, stir the air up.
Got it. Are there any other ways to warm up an orchard if the temperature dives dangerously low in the springtime?
Well, they've got these pots, I guess, like the orange growers have. You know, I mean, some people, you know, spray water that's a little warmer, you know. The first night, there was a snow cover on the orchard, so that wasn't so bad because it insulated things. But then the snow melted, and it got cold the next day, and there was no insulation. And it depends on what stage of the buds are. You know, some of the trees were fine, and some of the trees at the end of the row were okay, and in the middle of the row they were okay, but not all. So it's very difficult to figure out how the frost hurt things, and it didn't hurt our plums at all. And it didn't hurt half of our pears, so it's frustrating, you know, just
right.
The way it happened.
Are there any varieties of apple that are cold resistant that might have squeaked through?
Well, the Galas seem to be the most hardy for some reason. We had the same problem last year, but it wasn't as bad. But the Galas seem to have made it through last year and this year.
Jan, you mentioned the fact that the farm's been in the family for so many years now. What do you know about how the family dealt with a crop loss of this size in past generations?
Well, I mean, we've always had trouble with the weather. So, you know, you have good years and bad years. And that's the way it always has been. So you just have to deal with it. You have to try and find something else to take the place of the income from that, but, you know, we don't spend a lot of money. We just, you know, go with the flow.
Right. I had heard of some orchards actually lighting fires in the orchard to try to keep the plants warm. That
yeah,
seems
but that,
like...
That's
oh, go ahead.
Just too much work, you know. We could not do that.
Sure.
We'd have to buy all the pots and everything, so we just go with it and do what we can.
Yeah, maybe a strategy for a smaller place.
Yeah, and we have to buy apples for cider making. I mean, we've got lots of cider. Our cider tastes real good, but, you know, we take care of the orchard year-round. We pay help to prune the trees and take care of them, but then, you don't have a crop off of them. We have a lot of squash. We planted a lot of squash. We have corn stalks, we have straw, and we have apple butter and Indian corn and, you know, things like that. Everything that we normally would have in the fall, except for a real good crop of apples. And we've had raspberries. They're about through for the season. We try and have other things because people need some activity to get out and do.
Yes, we do. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll meet a new apple farmer from Detroit. Be right back.
Support for the Stateside Podcast comes from the University of Michigan's Go Blue Guarantee, committed to keeping a U of M undergraduate education within reach of all Michigan residents, regardless of socioeconomic status. Programs are available for all three campuses. More at goblueguarantee.umich.edu.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside Podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
In a large-scale operation like Wassum Farms, it's not realistic to do much mitigation to protect plants during a deep freeze. But for a small orchard, it might be the only way to survive. Last April, during those three cold days, we read about Detroit Farm and Cider. It's a newer orchard in an urban setting that was asking for charcoal donations to keep the bonfires lit around their 140 trees. Not for warmth from the fire, exactly, but for the blanket of smoke that would cover the land. Here to talk about how the season is faring is Leandra King, owner of Detroit Farm and Cider. Hi, Leandra. Welcome to Stateside.
Thank you for having me.
Do you want to tell us a little of the story about how you started the orchard and what drew you to apple farming?
So I've been farming for about 5 years. Prior to farming, I had a nonprofit, still have the nonprofit called Finding Our Roots, where I was doing seed giveaways and blight cleanup throughout the neighborhood and cultivating the lands. Outside of just loving nature and loving my community, not much more incentive than that.
For those who've never stopped by, can you tell folks a little bit about the setting and how you found it?
So Detroit Farm and Cider is approximately 4 acres. It used to be the old Peck Elementary School. And then prior to that, it was Divinity of the Sacred Heart. So it's a very secluded space right off of Lawrence Street between Woodrow Wilson and Rosa Parks.
Right. How did you find the spot and get access to it?
So the previous owner, Noah Link, was cultivating the land over there. And at that point, when I met him, he was just looking to sell it. And we were doing our own projects not far from the farm. You know, we were farming. We were doing more community work than farming, though.
So the space that you have, although it's in Detroit, it is subject to all the same weather patterns that happen in other parts of the state.
Right.
And during that cold snap last April, you put out this call for charcoal donations. Can you tell us what ended up happening?
Yeah. So, you know, I spoken to the previous owner, Noah Link, you know, how he fared through the frost every year. And he just kind of like, he let me know that, you know, they ended up losing a lot of fruit. And we didn't want that to happen this year. And the goal was to try to manage the orchard as best as possible this year, just because it had suffered some issues with black knot and fungus. And so we just kind of wanted to, you know, make sure that we had the best crop production and we weren't traumatizing the trees any more than what they had been going through. And so we put a call out for wood, for charcoal, and the entire community showed up. And we were out there I was out there with a few volunteers for about 48 hours and people were coming and going, bringing wood all the way up until 7 o'clock in the morning.
Wow. It must have felt like all hands on deck.
Oh, yeah. I think it was the most laborious and also the most moving night of my life. Mm. So just to see my entire community show up and show out was just, you know, phenomenal. And this year we've produced more fruit than we've ever produced.
This year you have, even in spite of the cold.
In spite of the cold, yeah. I think because of the added heat, I don't know the science behind it, but I know that this year we produced more fruit. Maybe it's all the love energy that was in the orchard.
I know that in addition to growing, you host farm-to-table dinner events at the farm. Tell us what those are like.
So these farm-to-table dinners are fundraisers for our cider barn build. And with these farm-to-table dinners, for the ticket price, we're providing a 3-course, 5-star, organically sourced meal from a different local restaurant every week. We'll be featuring a different musician or band every week. It's from 4 to 10. And within this, you get, of course, awesome food. You get to sit family style at a beautiful dining table in front of a waterfall in our aquaponics greenhouse and dine with your table mates. There's an open bar with signature artisanal cocktails that we're providing for this price. And we're trying to make it affordable so that way we can fundraise. At the end of the night, you get a horseback ride through the orchard with whoever you come with, and a bonfire with vegan s'mores and spiked hot cocoa.
Man, sign me up.
Yeah.
I know people are really, really very motivated for outdoor activities now with winter settling in.
We've gotten a lot of interest. We've seen a lot of interest in these dinners. So we're just going to keep doing them throughout the winter in our heated greenhouse, and our greenhouses, you know, harness the momentum that we have going on right now.
You mentioned that the fundraising is for a build that you're trying to do. How is it that you need to expand the farm's capacity?
So we need a place to house our cider presses, and that would be our cider barn. That's also where we're going to be selling retail items from local small businesses and making our donuts, selling our cider. We're going to have cider slushies, like a typical cider mill. And once the cider barn is built, then we will officially be a cider mill.
Do you see the farm always offering this kind of menu, so to speak, of things to do and taste and experience? Is this in line with what you'd always hoped you'd be able to offer?
I think this is a catalyst for something much greater. Our goal ultimately is to connect with the community and to be able to provide experiences for Detroiters that, you know, they otherwise wouldn't be able to experience, primarily Detroit youth. Being able to go to a cider mill and ride a horse and shoot a bow and arrow, or, you know, play lacrosse or do goat yoga, all of these things, they're healing and they're therapeutic. And I think, you know, being able to offer that experience in the city is groundbreaking.
And that's the Stateside Podcast for today. I'm April Baer. You can find full Stateside shows streaming anytime you want them at michiganradio.org. Our executive producer is Laura Weber-Davis. Today's pod was produced by Laura with help from Mercedes Mejia. Our theme music is by 14KT. Additional music from Blue Dot Sessions. Thank you so much for listening, and have a good weekend, apples or none. We'll see you Monday.